Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown 2018 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a questions and answers session. At that time, participants are asked to press star one to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you, and thanks everybody for joining us today. This is our annual Belmont Stakes preview call. As tends to happen this time of year, especially with the Triple Crown on the line, we've got a number of riders joining us today who aren't necessarily regulars to these calls. So, just to remind everyone quickly how we do this, I'll ask a few obvious questions to our guests to get things rolling, but then we'll open it up for questions from all of you. To ask a question, just hit pound one to put yourself in the queue, which you can do starting now if you'd like. The queue does reset for each guest, though, and I'll ask that everybody please be mindful that we have a lot of people waiting today, at least for our first guest. So try to keep the question short if you can, but by all means, ask what you need to do your work. So, with that, I'm pleased to welcome in the trainer of the Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner, Justify, and that, of course, is Mr. Bob Baffert. Bob, thanks for joining us again. Hello, Bob Baffert. I see him here.
Hello.
Bob, you there? All right.
I'm here.
Hey, Bob. Thanks. All right. Terrific. Thanks for coming on. You know, I'm not even sure what else to ask at this point, but, you know, it just, when I think about it, every Triple Crown attempt is difficult, but, you know, what Justify is trying to do is just astounding. So, how is this even possible with him having debuted just less than 4 months ago?
Well, I mean, it's an incredible journey it's been quick, but he's just, you know, he's handled everything, you know, what we've thrown at him, and he handles it without really losing his composure. He's actually, you know, a lot of horses, when you run them that many times, they, you know, they'll start getting a little bit, you know, they start getting nervous or hot or, but he seems like he's thriving on it, and he's just a very intelligent horse, and I think that's his biggest asset. Not only is he a great athlete, but his mind, I mean, I couldn't believe the way he stood in the paddock at the Kentucky Derby and then the Preakness, just standing there like he's been there so many times before. And he handles, you know, like when he went out to the paddock in the Preakness, he was just fine, like nothing bothers him. He's a very fearless type of horse. That's one thing about him. I know when you go up to a stall and you go to, you know, he'll push you around. He's very, you know, he's just an A personality type horse. And so, and I think that's probably another strong point that he has, that he has no fear. He just, that's the way he's always, he handles everything really well.
No, that seems clear. You've probably seen over the last few weeks, not surprisingly, people are looking for clues by comparing photos and video of American Pharoah 3 years ago and Justify at this specific point pre-Belmont. How did Pharoah kind of tip his hand this time in 2015, and how does that compare to what you see from Justify now?
Well, American Pharoah, he was, you know, I think I see a lot of resemblance in these two, the way they move. You know, they have that. I mean, Pharoah, when I worked him after the Preakness, I mean, he worked just, American Pharoah was like, his breezing, when he would breeze, he was like, he was a machine. And this horse is getting there. You know, I see that now. He's really, I think the seasoning catching up with him. And like the other day when I worked him, that's probably the best I've seen him work, where he was like a Pharoah type move. You know, American Pharoah going into Belmont, we knew we had the horse, so we, you know, just don't know if you can still get it done, because there's, you know, when you're talking 37 years, and, you know, I prepared myself for, you know, you got to prepare yourself for disappointment just in case, so you don't want to get too excited. So we were quietly, you know, confident that he could do it, but still they have to do it. And this horse is the same way. I mean, you know, he still has to get up there, and you don't know how the race is going to, you know, play out. But I just, you know, he still looks like he's still strong, and he came out of the work really well. I talked to Jimmy this morning. They jogged him. He said he was just dragging him around there. I mean, he's just really, and to me, he looks like fitter now. You know, I could see that he's getting, he was always a little bit soft because he's a big horse, but he's just enjoying what he's doing. So if you can keep a horse at that level where they still enjoy it, that's the whole key. But, you know, it's going to be difficult. You know, I can't, you know, it's tough, you know, mile and a half, it's going to be tough, but he's doing really well.
Hey, that's amazing that you say he might be fitter and tighter now that you can see that.
Well, I mean, he's just, you know, the way he worked, the way he handles himself, but he's just, you know, like I said, he's just so beautiful. He's a beautiful animal, but, you know, he's showing me what Pharaoh, I mean, to me, Pharaoh was like, you know, he was, you know, those works after the, you know, that's one thing I really miss about Pharaoh is that watching him work, I've never had a horse work like him. He was just his mechanics, his motion, just the way he did it. And Martin Garcia, we were talking about it the other day, flying back, he said, man, this horse is starting to act like Pharaoh, you know, that, you know, that greatness, you know. And so I go, man, I hope so, because he's going to have to really lay it out there. But, you know, it's fun to be. I think it's a different feeling because going in, we thought, you know, Pharaoh, you know, could do it. But there's always that doubt, you know, maybe are we just, you know, maybe, you know, he's not going to do it or whatever. But, you know, we feel that way about, but, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, I thought maybe, you know, we've seen other horses that we thought they were going to do it. And so, but we're still, you know, we're quietly optimistic that we can, you know, hopefully do it again. But I, you know, I'm like, I'm a realist. I don't believe it until I see it. So, right now we just stay focused and get them up there and you know, keep them happy.
Well, that's all great to hear. I'm going to turn it over to our operator to see what questions there are. I think I misspoke earlier and said pound one to ask a question. It's actually star one, but let's go to the operator and see who's in line.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star one to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to ask a question. I'll take our first question from Liz Clark of the Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you for doing this, Mr. Baffert. My question is about the decision not to race Justify as a two-year-old. And I'm wondering if you could explain how much of that was a result of a shift in your thinking about the best way to bring along a horse in general versus something that might have been specific to this horse, something you saw or sensed that you thought that approach might best serve Justify. In other words, is this the start of a trend
Yeah.
or a unique thing?
No, you know what? Actually, I didn't get him until November, so he wasn't quite ready
I'm sorry.
Yet. So he'd been
yes,
yeah. So that's why. Otherwise, he would have run, and it just happened. You know, a lot of these horses, they take you to the Derby. I mean, you can't. And so he was a big horse, and they took their time with him. And so when I got him, he was up to a half a mile. So I just brought him along. We weren't thinking Kentucky Derby with him. We knew we had a nice horse, and we're getting. And all of a sudden, when he broke his maiden, we thought, well, maybe, you know, we'll see. And then the next one, he go, oh, like maybe this is like something really, really special. He'd have to be special. And then when he won the San Diego Derby, it was like, well, we have to take a shot at the Derby now. But we were never really Elliot Walden from Windstar. He says, you know, don't worry about the Derby. Let's just take our time with them. Don't, you know, let's not get in a rush with them. So he actually, he brought us along on his own. So, he's that kind of a horse. You know, you can only, you know, like American Pharoah, he ran as a 2-year-old and had an issue with him, had a stop on him. So then I had to bring him along sort of the same way. So he's sort of been in that pattern. So, nothing was planned. I can't take credit for it. It just happened.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
We'll take our next question from Tom Padula of America's Best Racing. Please go ahead.
Okay. Bob, what did you learn from the Triple Crown failures that you had?
You know what? All my horses, I think they ran well except for War Emblem. But my other horse, they fired. They just got beat. And they just, it just didn't happen. And you get, you know, I got beat. I ran second. The Silver Charm, he got beat a half to three quarters there at the end. Real quiet. He gets beat a nose. He was in front before the wire and in front after the wire. It just, you know, but he ran his race. I was proud of their efforts. They just didn't get it done. War Emblem, he stumbled badly at the star, but I don't know if he could have done it because he was a very light horse. It was catching up with him. And then Pharoah, he just, you know, he was just a different type of horse. You know, he was just a really, you know, he was showing me some, you know, extra, like he had this, you know, when he won the Preakness, it was pretty impressive the way he just went so fast and he just kept on, you know, his pedal to the metal and he was just getting stronger, you know, like, and I've had horses like Point Given who got stronger as we went along, you know, but he didn't run well in the Derby. So I think I learned more from Point Given, just getting the horse ready to make sure he in the Derby, because that was probably one of the biggest disappointments that he didn't win the Kentucky Derby.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Jason Frakes of the Louisville Courier Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for coming on. I was curious. I don't know if you would term Restoring Hope a rabbit for this race or not, but I was curious your thoughts on having him in the race and how maybe he affects Justify up front as far as maybe having company versus being alone on the front.
You know, I don't know where that rabbit came from. Somebody threw it out there. No, Restoring Hope is like a one-pace kind of horse. He's one steady, and the owner wanted to take a shot if he's doing well. He'd probably run like he did in the wood. You know, he's one of these horses that is just, I don't see him on the lead. I see him right there, you know, close, but he's just steady. He's just a steady kind of horse. So we thought, the way he ran in the wood, he deserves a shot because, you know, a mile and a half, he's bred for it. And he looks really good right now. I ran him one turn mile. It was too short for him. So, if you watch his wood race, he's a horse that will be, you know, he'll be in the first group, but I don't see him being on the lead.
I guess as a follow, I mean, does it matter to you whether Justify is alone up there, or would you rather see him having someone near him like did Matt in the Preakness?
I think that, with Good Magic, he was, you know, he can sit off a horse, but Good Magic was pushing him out really wide, and that's why they, you know, they had their own little private match race there, and he didn't want to end up 9 wide, and so, you know, the Belmont is different. You know, we're sure that, you know, these different riders, you know how they're going to react in there, and they're excited, and, you know, they're, I think Good Magic, they were, you know, they were trying to win. They were just going to let us alone in there, so I don't blame them. And, you know, you can think it out in your head. You don't know until the gate comes open. You don't know what's going to happen. So Mike Smith, you know, he'll play his hand however it is, but this horse actually, he likes another horse. He likes to be with another. When he makes a lead, he's not one that's just going to draw off. He likes to, you know, he likes company with him.
Thank you, Bob.
We'll take our next question from Dan Vulcan of USA Today. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Bob. 3 years ago, there was a lot of conversation about how horse racing really needed a Triple Crown winner. And I was curious, you know, since Pharaoh actually did it and we don't have that conversation as much anymore, have you noticed any, you know, real impact on the game or interest in the game as a result of finally being able to do it?
Yeah, I saw, you know, where the impact was in the, we got a lot of new people get involved in business buying horses. Prices have gone up. Everybody wants quality. Everybody wants to, you know, you're getting a lot of, you know, you're getting money from the Middle East. You're getting from Europe, China. You know, I think it's really boosted the business, you know, at the top level. Everybody wants to, you know, play at that top level. And so I see that. It's really great for the sport, really. And I think a lot of people, I remember with American Pharoah, to this day, I still have strangers, come up to me and say, you know, how happy American Pharoah made them feel watching them, you know, just watching them, win the Triple Crown. So, you know, people, especially in America, you know, they fall in love with these animals. They follow them, like Justify. He's getting a following. And, you know, I have people come up, your horse is so beautiful. I hope he, you know, at the airport, I hope he wins the next one. And so, you know, people start following, they have a reason to follow.
Thank you.
I'll take our next question from Melissa Hoppert of the New York Times. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bob. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on Tom Padula's question in terms of your preparations for your Triple Crown runners. Has that changed through the years? And it definitely seems like a trend now that more trainers are bringing their Belmont runners back to Churchill and kind of keeping them out of the media spotlight. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, I don't do it to keep them out of the media spotlight. I do it because I have a string of horses there. And, Churchill, it's quiet. You know, it's quiet there, but, the track, I like the track, and it's been a little bit warmer this year. You know, I remember with Pharaoh, it was cool during that whole time, so there wasn't a lot of heat. I remember with War Emblem, it was really, really hot. But, I just feel that, you know, Belmont's at mile and a half and track, and I've done well shipping into that place, and so, but basically I have all my people there and everything. It just makes it easier, and I like just coming in on top of the race like that.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. We'll take our next question from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, Bobby, if Justify is LeBron and Pharaoh is Steph Curry, Arrogate is Durant, who does that make point given? Who's point given?
Well, I think American Pharaoh is Michael Jordan.
There you go. All right.
There we go. And, you know, point given is Kevin Durant.
Point given is Kevin Durant. Big, strong,
right.
Studly, right?
Big, strong.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it, man. Best of luck.
Sure.
We'll take our next question from Liz O'Connell of Freelance. Please go ahead.
Hello. Two questions. First, a quick one. The last time you got to put a stick on Justify, how tall was he?
I want to say he's 16'3". 16-3, I would say.
He's a big fellow then, huh? So, and
okay, he weighs like 1,270 pounds.
Definitely big. Now, and earlier you said that, you know, post-Pharaoh, you're seeing kind of new money coming in and from all over. Is there anybody coming in that's a single owner keeping a horse, all of the horse, or are you seeing more of the, you know, you have a good horse and then people are buying into it? Does anybody really want to keep a horse to themselves anymore?
Yeah, there's still people. You know what? These groups are good. They come together, they get involved, and then when they realize that, you know what, maybe I just want to own a horse myself. And you'll see a lot of guys will branch out on their own, and they'll buy horses on their own. And but I think when you're first getting in, you have to get past the intimidation factor because you don't know what to do, who to talk to. It's all, a lot of it's just word of mouth, the racing. You know, somebody gets in,
uh-huh,
agents bring people in, we're going to use this guy, use it. So they don't know. And then a lot of the smart guys, they educate themselves. Okay, now I realize how it works. Now I want to get, I'm going to do it myself. And then you'll see people, they'll come in, they'll buy a farm, they'll buy horses, they'll have fun. Because racing, not only it's a sport and we enjoy, but it's a social thing also. You meet great people, you go to the races, and it's just a really, the social part of it. You know, you meet all kinds of people, and it's fun, and like the Belmont, it'll be a fun day. Everybody's there and, you know, hanging out. It's just like a Super Bowl. You just see all these people, and it's just, racing has become more of a, now with the social media, people know what's going on now, and so everybody's more updated.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
It used to be an old man's sport, you know. It used to be an old man's sport, but now it's, you know, the younger people are getting involved.
Good to hear. All right. Thank you.
There are no further questions.
That was easy.
All right, Bob. Yeah, that was pretty easy. I'll just ask you one more. We haven't talked yet about the track surface. I mean, at this point, do you think you'd almost maybe prefer a wet track? I know that sounds crazy, but it could cause issues for other horses, and you know that your horse will handle it professionally.
You know what? I don't even think about that. That's like the last thing on my mind. Right now, we're just focused on keeping him happy and fit and ready, and hopefully he'll get away from the gate well. I know Pharaoh, he didn't break well. He stepped back right when they opened. So, you know, you just worry about things like that. So he was moving when the gate opened. So that's the only time he never got away, was in the Belmont. And it was for a few seconds there, it was like, oh, boy, you know what I mean? So just never know, you know, what can happen.
Very good. Well, Bob, thanks so much for your time, as always, not just on these calls, but all the interviews you've been doing with the media over the course of the Triple Crown. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you at Belmont.
All right, thank you.
All right, Bob Baffert taking a Derby and Preakness winner to the Belmont for the fifth time. And meanwhile, we've been attempting to connect with Bill Mott. We'll keep trying him, but now we've got Dale Romans, it looks like. So we'll return to Bill Mott in a little bit, and we're happy to have Dale Romans on. Dale, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
Dale, of course, is going to saddle Free Drop Billy, who never really fired in the Derby. He was 16th, and I'll also mention that Dale has finished third in the Belmont four different times. Dale, talking about Free Drop Billy, his Derby, he actually found a pretty good spot on the rail, but then when the real running started, it just seemed like he couldn't keep up. What was your take on that effort?
Just as you said, I mean, I thought he was in good position down the backside. I thought we had a chance, and he just kind of floundered around like he did in the Breeders' Cup. But he bounced back from, you know, I never really had an excuse for the Breeders' Cup. He bounced back from that and well this year, and, you know, he's still looking for a win, but he's been consistent and ran hard every time, and hopefully he bounces back from the Derby and runs a good race here.
And so that said, I mean, what have you been seeing the last few weeks, and what gives you the confidence that you know, the mile and a half is in his scope and that this is a good spot for him?
Well, you know, there's only two chances to run in races like this. And after the Derby, we didn't know what we were going to do with him, but he's just trained so well and had some good breezes since the Derby, and he's doing great. And I just think he deserves to run with the best and try him out one more time. And as far as the mile and a half, yeah. I mean, his brother did win a mile and a half in Dubai this year. On the turf, of course, but he's bred to go the distance.
Excellent. And you know, we should also note that the last Triple Crown winner, you were the only trainer to beat him his three-year-old season. You've never been a person to duck ahead of a favorite before, so can you just talk a little bit more about a general philosophy of giving horses chances in races where they've earn their way there, even if they might not be a favorite on paper?
Well, you never know what's going to happen in a horse race. And if your horse is doing good, I think you should give them an opportunity to run with the best. And if they don't run well, you regroup and find a spot where they would, and everybody will forget about it. But when they jump up and do something special, nobody will ever forget. And there's a lot of money on the line, not just in purses, but in breeding and their afterlife. And Wayne Lucas told me a long time ago when I was just getting started, we were walking out of Saratoga today, and he said he's made millions of dollars running horses where people told him he didn't belong. And if you know your horse is doing good, don't be afraid to give him a chance. And I've kind of stuck to that.
Very well. Very good. Well, let me step aside, and we'll see what questions the media has.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. We'll take the first question from Pat Ford of Yahoo Sports. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale. You've been obviously at Churchill for a time when Justify has been there and certainly seen all the big horses come and go in recent years. What do you think of him in general?
He's a monster. I mean, he's out there, you can just tell that he's a special horse. And I think he's looked really, really good after the Preakness. He, you know, he had a couple of rough days after the Derby, but since the Preakness, he looked great to me.
And another thing, do you feel like, from your standpoint, you've seen any sort of bounce or bump in overall interest, whether it's ownership or fan interest or media interest in horse racing since American Pharoah won the Triple Crown?
You know, I think, you know, a lot of people are down on the sport and kind of naysayers about it, but I think that the sport's in good position to move forward. I think I have seen a lot of interest in the game, and it's a younger crowd that seems to be showing a lot of interest. I think the game's tailor-made for the Internet, and I think a lot of young people are finding it there. And I think, you know, the more coverage you get, the more people are going to lead to it. And once you start getting into it, you're going to love it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Dale.
We'll
take our next question from Dan Wilson of USA Today. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Dale. Pat kind of took my question, but I'll phrase it this way. The sport seems to be trending to build up to these big event days, whether it's Triple Crown, Breeders' Cup, Pegasus. Just as a trainer, is that kind of where the sport's going in your mind? That you know, it's these big events where it's more than just about, you know, watching the horses run and all these other things around the race.
Well, I think the big events are driving the industry. I don't know if they're getting always, but it is a big. But what's happening, I think anyway, with people and the interest and young people coming around and the big events being such a big deal, that people are starting to follow more of the players in the game and then certain stables, certain horses. And so they keep up the rest of the year with, like, their teams. Like, some people like one NASCAR team over another. It just seems to me like it impresses me. Young people come around and they know so much about you know, certain stables, and they have their little fan group each stable or certain horses. And I started seeing it with Shackleford. I mean, he was kind of first media star for the sport. And it's amazing how many people would just come around because they're fans of him. It's pretty. I think it's an interesting period in horse racing right now.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Tom Padula of America's Best Racing. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Dale, whenever there is a Triple Crown shot, does it sort of stoke everybody's competitive fires to do everything possible to deny it?
I don't know if you can stoke any fires anymore for someone just wanting to win the Belmont. But, you know, it's fun and it's exciting to be a part of something that could be historic. Like, you know, we ran third in the Belmont when Farrell won. Just being there and a racing fan, I was glad to be a participant and feel electricity and energy from all the people and the fans that day. And it makes the whole day a little bit more special.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1. We'll move to our next question from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Dale, how in the world are you?
I'm pretty good here, Billy. How about you?
Oh, we're doing good down here in the hills, I'm telling you.
Good.
Billy, tactical speed. Would you say he's got tactical speed, and is that one of the things that you think makes him great for this race?
I think he'll have tactical speed going a mile and a half just because the pace scenario will be a lot slower. You know, we've been bringing him from a little off the pace, but he has good turn of foot, too. He's not just a plotter. So, you know, we'll just see how the race sets up and how the speed scenario is and leave that up to Robbie.
Speaking of Shackleford, his boy, Promise Fulfilled, have you made a decision on where he's going to go?
Well, he's either going to run in the easy go or the Woody Stevens, and that may be a game time decision. We're just going to see how they both, you know, how they come together.
Dale, appreciate your time, man. You know, I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, buddy.
We'll take our next question from Ray Pollock of Pollock Report. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale.
Hey, Rick.
Does pedigree matter? Is there a difference between a mile and a quarter and a mile and a half in your mind as far as the pedigree is concerned?
That's a very good question. I think pedigree matters for route distance, period. I think if you got the pedigree of a mile and a quarter, though, you probably got the pedigree of a mile and a half. I think that a little bit of difference is that I think a mile and a half is actually more of a speed race, speed horses race, than maybe a mile and a quarter. You know, when they get to eight pole, they're all tired. And you see a lot of horses get to the lead and just kind of gallop on around there at a mile and a half. I heard Woody Stevens say it years ago that, you know, he would know. He said it's a speed horse race. But I believe as far as pedigree goes, if you can go a mile and a quarter, if your pedigree says that, it'll probably take you a mile and a half.
So you don't feel you have the fact that Union Rag won at a mile and a half makes any difference in terms of
it's not going to hurt us at all. That's the thing. So you got to hope that it hurts. You got to hope it hurts somebody else that they can't get the mile and a half. I don't think we'll have a problem getting it. I think we'll be out there. You know, mile and a half is the least of my concerns. But you know, maybe it'll hamper somebody else.
Right.
You know, really, who knows? We run that distance so little in this country, especially on dirt. That it's, I was telling somebody today. I mean, do you really know how to train even for it? It's a fine line that you walk of having your horse fresh but fit and not knocked out.
We'll now move to our next question from Liz Clark of the Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Dale. I hope you don't mind a question about Bob Baffert. I was just wondering if you could share, from your vantage point, any thoughts or insight into what principally accounts for the success he's had over the years, if it's something you think he understands or you know, a quality he has that, that stands out above others?
Well, I mean, I always said I think he's the best horse trainer in America, and he always puts his horses first. I mean, just like scratching American Pharoah from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he didn't have a serious injury. He even told me himself he could have run him. And, you know, a lot of us might have caved under the pressure, but he did the right thing and went on and won a Triple Crown the next year. And the horse is always put first, and he just got that sixth sense about him. And, but you know what about Bob? Bob's a very good person, too. He's a kind person. He does a lot of things people don't know anything about. And I say, like, when we beat Farrell, the first call I took that night was from Bob Baff.
Really?
And he just called to congratulate me.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
All right, Dale, thanks so much for your time as always, and best of luck next weekend. We'll see you in New York.
Thank you, bud. See you there.
All right, Dale Romans, who's got Free Drop Billy in the Belmont, and we are going to wait a couple minutes and reach out to Bill Mott. We had our messages a little mixed up. Bill actually is running in the first at Belmont, which just went off a few minutes ago. We were texting just a second ago, and he's going to try to join us. He had the favorite in there, and that race has finished, so we'll just give him a couple minutes and then try him again. In the meantime, I do have some information from the New York Racing Association I can read off. Hopefully some of this might be helpful in your stories as we wait to connect with Bill Mott. These are all some bullet points that were provided to me by the NYRA press office, and hopefully you can work some of this into your stories or find some of this useful. The post-draw, as most of you probably already know, will be Tuesday night in the Foxwoods Club at Citi Field. That's at 5:30 p.m. Before the Mets and Orioles game, and if you want to join all of us for the post position draw, just make sure you contact the NYRA press office first. Following the draw, Bob Baffert will be there. He'll throw out the first pitch right before the 7:10 start time. Credentials will be available for pickup in the NYRA press office starting Sunday, and if you haven't requested them yet, I suggest you get on that. Let's see. If you have not been receiving notes and releases, you can contact me or contact the NYRA press office directly. Pat McKenna is probably your best bet to get on that list. And, of course, you can follow NYRA on Twitter at TheNYRA or at Belmont Stakes. As far as Justify goes, he'll be arriving at Belmont Park on Wednesday, June 6th. And for tickets, ticket sales will be capped at 90,000. All of the reserve seating is already sold out. But general admission will be available for $25 until tomorrow, and then after Friday, and then up until that $90,000 cap, the GA will go up to $30. Premium hospitality is extremely limited, but there are a few seats remaining in the trackside tent. And finally, if the event is not sold out prior to June 9th, general admission will be available for purchase exclusively through Ticketmaster. Now, with that, we're going to see if we can connect with Mr. Bill Mott, and our operator is going to dial to him now. Hopefully, he's unsaddled and checked on his runner at Belmont, and maybe we'll be able to get him here. I think someone's talking to him. This is encouraging. Stand by. Bill Mott.
Hello.
Bill Mott, are you with us? Hey. Bill, it's Jim Mulvihill from the NTRA. So sorry that we were bothering you when there was a race about to go off. Totally got mixed up on the times. We got to you a little earlier than we would have expected, but we appreciate you jumping on now.
Okay, good.
We just want to, get some updates on Hofberg, of course, seventh in the Derby, and looking at the replay, at the 3/8 pole, he only had a few horses beat. So I guess my question is, what happened from there that allowed him to make a run and get seventh?
Well, I mean, I think he went into the turn. He opted for the rail and approaching the 3/8 pole, he was only about 8 lengths off the lead. And I think by the time he got to the quarter pole, he's about 15 lengths off the lead. So he lost a lot of ground around the turn, just having to check and wait behind horses. And, he made up ground through the stretch, but it was, we've given up too much on the turn. It just, with a big field and, you got to have a little luck. If he would have had the Calvin Burrell trip along the fence, it would have, he probably would have been, I think he would have been in the running, so.
Excellent. And can you tell us a little bit about how he's been doing the last few weeks up at the training track at Saratoga? He's been training quietly at Oklahoma.
He's been, I don't know about quietly, but he's been, we've been out of the spotlight. he's been going well. We've been happy with him. He's had a couple decent works up here. He'll breeze again before he comes down to Belmont, and we'll probably, plan on coming down to Belmont Monday or Tuesday.
Excellent. Well, Bill, I want
to... But he's doing fine. Horse has been training well, and he seems to be happy, and we haven't had any major roadblocks yet.
Very good. Thanks for the update. I'm going to let the media ask some questions now, so I'll turn it over to the operator.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. We'll take our first question from Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, Bill. Thanks very much for doing this. What is it you see in Hofberg that allows you to think he can beat a horse like Justify after what we've seen out of Justify and the Derby and the Preakness?
Well, I think our horse has plenty of stamina. It seems like that's been his forte. He keeps coming. He looked like even in the Kentucky Derby, he kept coming. And, we have a lot of respect for Justify, and he's the horse to beat. It's a major challenge for us or for anybody, I suppose, to beat him, but that's what it's all about. I mean, we can't let him go around there by himself. We've got to try to offer some competition, and we think we've got a good horse, and he's doing well, and we think he hits, we feel like he fits the profile of a horse that could be very competitive in the Belmont.
I think Judmont Farms had Empire Maker in 2003 when Empire Maker beat Funny Side at the Belmont. Have you talked to any of the folks there about kind of what that experience was like in beating a potential triple crown contender?
No, I haven't really. Of course, I've watched all those races, and it's a major challenge for any horse to win the Triple Crown, and I think you got to take your hat off to any horse that does it. It's not an easy, and it's certainly not an easy task. You got to have a good horse, you got to have a tough horse, and you've got to be able to withstand the challenges of horses that probably haven't run in both races. We skipped the Preakness, so hopefully we're fresh and ready to go.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Kelly Riley of Brisnet.com. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. I was just curious about that first work back after Derby Day that you teamed up Hofberg with Yoshida for his first work back also since Leo Forrester. So I was just curious about your decision to team them up for the first work back on May 18th.
Well, they're both nice horses, good horses, and they, you know, both breeze fine in company, and neither one of them, you know, tries to overdo it. I mean, both are very talented horses, and I thought they'd be a good team to work together. I think, you know, we just, you know, made an effort to keep them together. We weren't trying to have any kind of a horse race. You know, we just a good, useful workout, and we thought they paired up very well.
Excellent. I imagine Yoshida is still on course for the Queen Anne.
He is. Yes. Yeah. We don't ship until the 11th of the month, and of course his race is the 19th over there. So we're on course to go.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1. We'll now move to our next question from Andrew Gross of Newsday. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Bill. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you.
Just curious how you think Hofburg maybe, you know, matches up or compares to some of the other three-year-olds you've brought along. And I'm thinking specifically of 2010. You know, do you see any similarities?
Who was 2010? Was that
Drosselmeyer?
Drosselmeyer.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would say that Hofburg probably is a horse that has come to hand maybe a little quicker. I mean, Drosselmeyer was a very good horse, you know, and had a lot of staying power, and I think had a lot of stamina, and I think that's one thing that this horse has in his favor. He has a lot of stamina. I mean, he does his work, and he seems to recover very well from his workouts and from his races. I mean, he doesn't seem to be exhausted, and of course, you know, not only you have to have a horse that's, you know, got plenty of speed, but they do, it helps when you feel you've got a lot of endurance.
Just, if you could finish the sentence, if everything goes well for you at Belmont, where will your horse be, you know, kind of coming into the final stretch there?
Well, I don't, you know, in my watching past Belmonts and in a lot of those races, I don't, you know, you probably don't want to be, give your horse too much to do because, you know, a lot of the horses, probably, you know, there's usually not anybody that's closing that fast, going a mile and a half. I mean, there's going to be horses that are closing certainly, but you know, any horse that's, you know, horse like Justify, if he turns for home two in front in the Belmont, he's going to be hard to catch.
All right. Thank you so much.
There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you.
Looks like that's it. All right. Well, Bill, thanks so much for your time, as always. I know you got a few more in later today at Belmont, so best of luck with those, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
All right. Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott to wrap up our Belmont Stakes preview call. And as always, I'll remind you that you can find an audio file and a transcript of this entire call on NCRA.com. I'll post that there within the next 24 hours. Perhaps even sooner. I'll be on site in New York starting Tuesday, so if any of you need any help or if there's anything I can do to assist with your stories, just by all means give me a ring or send me an email. Thanks, of course, to Bob Baffert for taking the time today, and Dale and Bill, and and our operators who make this call run. I'm going to send it back to them now to wrap up.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.